Heavenly Creatures, a poem written by Pauline Reaper Parker about her and her best friend, Juliet Hulme. There are living among two dutiful daughters, a man who possesses two beautiful daughters, the most glorious beings in creation. They'd be the pride and joy of any nation. You cannot know nor try to guess the sweet soothingness of their caress. The outstanding genius of this pair is understood by few, they are so rare. Compared with these two, every man is a fool. The world is most honored that they should reign to rule. And above us, these goddesses reign on high. I worship the power of these lovely two, with that adorning love known to so few. 'Tis indeed a miracle one must feel, that two such heavenly creatures are real. Both sets of eyes, though different far, hold many mysteries strange. Impassively they watch the race of men decay and change. Hatred burning bright in the brown eyes, with enemies for fuel. Icy scorn glitters in the gray eyes, contemptuous and cruel. Why are men such fools they will not realize the wisdom that is hidden behind those strange eyes? And these wonderful people are you and I. On June 22, 1954, teenage best friends Juliet Hulme and Pauline Reaper went for a walk in Victoria Park with Pauline's mother, Honora. 30 minutes later, the girls ran up to a nearby tea shop with blood all over their hands and clothes, and Pauline screaming, "It's Mommy. I think she's dead. She's fallen and hit her head."
The sources for today's episode is going to be listed on our show notes. Juliet Hulme was born in London on October 28th, 1938, just a year before the start of the World War II. She was the first child of Dr. Henry and Hilda Hulme. Her father was a well-to-do, respected nuclear physicist. He was a genius who had always been at the top of his class in school and was at the top of his field later. Dr. Hulme met and married Juliet's mother, Hilda, in 1937. Hilda was the daughter of a Presbyterian minister. She moved away from home and developed this posh, high society British accent. She was actually from Northern England, but you couldn't tell it by talking to her. She most likely taught school for a living until she met and married Dr. Hulme when she was 25. Hilda was beautiful, outgoing. She was confident. She had been excited about her new husband's career and advancements. She just thrived on high society work, you know, cocktail parties, the events, the connections. The couple had been thrilled because Dr. Hulme, when he was only 30 years old, he was offered a position at the Greenwich Royal Observatory in London.
I've been there.
Have you?
Yes.
Really? Well, he was actually the assistant to the chief astrologist.
Oh, wow.
That was a big deal. So did you go there on your trip?
Yes.
Wow, that is so cool.
I'm going to go back and look at the pictures I took of the plaques and see if I see his name on anything.
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Because there's like a little museum inside there.
Oh, please do. I'd love to put those on the show notes. Just before they moved, Hilda found out that she was pregnant because, you know, they had to go to London for that job. A year after Juliet's birth is when World War II would break out. Of course, it was a stressful time for everybody, but Hilda seemed especially frustrated and unfulfilled during that time. She was struggling with her new role as a mother. She just didn't seem to have the natural motherly instincts. Plus, all of her upper-class friends were busy doing this important war work, and she was at home with a one-year-old.
Yeah.
It wasn't what Hilda had envisioned her life to be. During the war, people were sometimes asked to pause their regular jobs to fulfill positions needed to advance the war efforts. Dr. Hulme was one of those people. He led Britain's atomic weapons research during the war.
Yeah. Okay, that's pretty impressive.
It was. And he was young.
Yeah, I mean, you said it was before he was 30?
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the Blitz?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, the Blitz was this 8-month bombing campaign.
Yes.
By Hitler,
mm-hmm.
where they just mercilessly dropped bombs on London and other cities, hoping to weaken the morale mm-hmm. of the citizens to put pressure on the government to surrender. So when Juliet was just 2 years old, she and her mother, Hilda, they were caught outside during one of these air raids.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. It traumatized Juliet so much that she ended up suffering from bomb shock.
And she was how old?
She was 2.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine that that would be traumatizing.
A lot of London's children were sent to other safer countries during the war. But usually, children under the age of 5, their mothers, they would go with them. But Hilda stayed in London with her husband while Juliet was sent to Barbados for a while.
Was she sent to stay with family?
A foster family.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm not sure for how long. By March of 1944, she was back home. Mm-hmm. And when she was 5, her mother gave birth to a little boy named Jonathan.
Okay. Sounds like she probably didn't even have a really close bond with her mother.
No.
Just due to all of those circumstances. Yeah.
Just a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And then after coming home from the hospital, Hilda had some kind of a postpartum complication. One morning when Dr. Hume was, he had already gone to work. For some reason, Hilda left early in the morning, her 5-year-old daughter, without telling her where she was going. And she took the baby and went to the hospital.
Hilda doesn't sound like a great mother.
I know. Can you believe that?
That's kind of harsh.
So Juliet wakes up with nobody home, terrified,
she,
of course.
She was probably scared to death.
Yeah, as any 5-year-old would be.
Right.
Whatever was going on with Hilda, it was severe enough that they admitted her. And poor Juliet was not allowed to see her mother for days.
Oh, poor little thing.
I know. But the baby, Jonathan, stayed with its mother in the hospital. So from that day forward, Juliet resented her little brother.
Mm-hmm. She probably felt like, well, they loved him and they didn't love her.
Yeah. Juliet started to act out behaviorally. She would get mad and throw fits when she didn't get her way. She was stubborn and I'm sure suffering without really knowing how to express it.
Right. I mean, she's only 5.
Exactly. In the same year her brother was born and her mother was hospitalized, Juliet got a severe case of bronchitis that turned into pneumonia, and it actually nearly killed her. For the next 2 years, Juliet was very frail and sickly. She couldn't go to school or play with the other children. She was stuck inside with her mother all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The family doctor told Mr. and Mrs. Hume that a warmer climate would be better for their daughter during the winter. She was fine in the UK summers and spring, but her lungs were just really bad and couldn't tolerate the winters.
And it's very damp and drizzly there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So again, instead of accompanying her daughter, Hilda sent Juliet to the Bahamas for 13 months to live with a foster family.
You know, this kid's being shipped out to these people. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know. This is like the second time.
Yeah, for 13 months. Now, yeah. The doctor said the winter.
Right.
Didn't say the whole year.
So it sounds like she just wanted her out of her hair.
It really does. Hilda would later say that when Juliet came back, she was very difficult and self-willed. She was hard to discipline and unable to handle criticism.
Well, I can't imagine why.
Can you imagine the attachment issues
right.
she probably had? Goodness, look at all she had endured and how desperate she probably was for attention.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother would also say that Juliet was an advanced learner and loved to play pretend. She had a wonderful imagination, but it was hard to get her back to reality. For instance, if she was playing fairies, she wanted to go on pretending to be a fairy, which I honestly don't think is that weird. She was little and spent a lot of time alone. So I'm sure she did have a vivid imagination.
Yeah, she probably lived in fantasy world.
And her dream world was probably safer
yeah.
and that's an than her reality.
That's an escape mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think Hilda was mean to Juliet per se, but she was overwhelmed by her and emotionally neglectful.
Mm-hmm.
Juliet was never disciplined either. Maybe out of laziness or even guilt. But I strongly believe kids crave boundaries. Will almost beg for them through their behavior sometimes.
Absolutely.
And this was probably the case with Juliet. Hilda said later in court, I and my husband were very fond of her and gave her every attention. I think what she meant by that was that they gave in to her and tried to appease her.
Okay.
Because she wasn't getting all their attention. No. She didn't even live with them a lot of the time. According to Hilda, because of her health from 1944 until 1948, Juliet was separated from her family most of the time.
And that's a 4-year span.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
She went to different sanitariums and lived with various people, friends, and family in warmer climates. It definitely seems like her parents did not mind these long separations from their daughter. Seems like they just used her health as an excuse to distance themselves.
Ship her off to somebody else.
Isn't it sad?
I can't really fathom it. I mean, my kids have been gone for 4 days on a trip and I'm missing them like crazy.
I know.
I can't imagine that long of a period of a time and not care that your child's not with you.
You know, when children have abandonment issues, it causes a lot of psychological problems later on.
Oh, yeah.
In 1948, Dr. Hume, Juliet's dad, took a job as rector of Canterbury in Christ Church in New Zealand. It was a really prestigious position that came with a colonial mansion. He later said that he thought his family could be happy there and the climate would be good for his children. Juliet had already been there for 14 months.
Who was she with there? Foster family.
Yeah, I guess. So, yeah, I mentioned him very little in the beginning of the story because there just really wasn't that much to tell as far as his engagement with his daughter. He was an important, powerful man who worked all the time, and he did play an important role, like a vital role in the war. But when he was home, he was detached.
Mm-hmm.
And disinterested, I guess, in his daughter.
Well, I don't think that was uncommon.
That was the next thing on my notes. Rearing the children was up to the mother and providing was the father's job. It was just a different time.
It was.
So it wasn't uncommon for dads not to be hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the family moved to Christchurch, his wife Hilda was unhappy in their marriage. Dr. Hume was brilliant, and he knew it, by the way, but he was also kind of dull. He didn't have great social skills. I mean, he was kind of weird a little bit. Hilda, on the other hand, she craved excitement. She loved, like I said, loved those cocktail parties and entertaining, being a pillar of the community and the center of attention.
Mm.
What's interesting, though, is that when they moved to Christchurch, she became a marriage counselor.
Wait. Could you just decide to do that? You didn't need any training?
I mean, they sent her for training.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she worked on, like, this council as a marriage counselor.
Okay. That's interesting.
It is. Juliet joined her family soon after the move. She would have been 10 years old at the time. When she met her parents and brother there, she hadn't, I said this already, she hadn't seen him for more than a year and a half. Her father described her as being very clingy.
Well, I cannot imagine why.
Oh my goodness, these parents.
She's a marriage counselor. She needs to go for some parenting counseling.
Seriously. In 1949, Juliet was sent away again to a private boarding school that she absolutely hated.
So, I mean, really, they just wanted her out of their hair. I mean, it's obvious at this point, and not just to us, but it had to have been obvious to her.
Dr. and Mrs. Hume settled in right away and started making the people in Christchurch uncomfortable in different ways.
Well, that was what I was going to ask. In what way?
He, because of his social awkwardness, and he was unwilling to listen to other board members. He said that he was unable to suffer fools very well.
Oh.
He was very arrogant, needless to say. And Hilda behaved like she thought she was better than all the other ladies in Christchurch. And she did think that. In a conversation with her housekeeper one morning, she said, "Of course, we belong to the top of the tree."
Oh, my goodness.
Like I said, she was stylish and confident. She was well-spoken. And she really didn't care to make friends with the ladies there. They didn't like her, and Hilda was fine because most of their husbands liked her.
Oh, okay.
She was flirtatious with the men and very condescending with the women. You know the type.
Oh, yeah.
She had a few English women friends, and that was plenty for her. She really wasn't into the New Zealanders. She would even order her English tea because their tea was
not
terrible.
Good enough for
wasn't
her.
Good enough for her. Because of her status in the community, it wasn't like she or her husband were being excluded from anything, just gossiped about.
Yeah. You know? She does not sound like a very likable person.
She wasn't a very likable person. Juliet's parents finally did let her come home from boarding school because she hated it that much. She had been away for so long that being home was awkward. A maid would say that Juliet was spoiled, arrogant, and rude to everyone, including her parents.
Mm.
She said Hilda made excuses for her daughter's bad behavior. She gets very frustrated because she's a genius, you know. It's really not her fault. She can't help it. After some trial and error with a few different schools, Hilda found what she felt would be a good fit for Juliet, who had an IQ of 170. So okay. she was pretty dang smart.
Yeah.
It was important to her that Juliet be challenged academically. And that's one thing I'll say for Hilda. She did notice from an early age that her daughter was very intelligent. In 1952, at 13, Juliet started Christ Church Girls High School. Right away, all the girls wanted to be friends with her. She was intelligent. She dressed fashionably. She wore her hat brim pulled down around the sides of her head, which was against the school rules. So that made it super cool.
Yeah.
Her English accent was different and elegant. But like her mother, Juliet was not interested in friendships. She just said they were all ordinary. One time she told a group of girls, "You are all so positively Victorian."
Oh, my goodness. It sounds like the whole family thinks they're too good for everybody else.
Yes. The girls had no idea what in the world she was talking about, but she sounded so cool saying it that it just made them want to be friends with her even more.
Yeah. She's like the new cool kid.
Right.
And everybody, yeah, she's kind of exotic because she's not from there.
She was a snob for sure.
Yeah.
Juliet excelled in every area at school except for sports and PE. Because of her health, her doctor wrote a note excusing her from physical activity. So during PE, Juliet, you know, she'd have to sit out on the sides. And this is when she met a girl named Pauline Reaper, who also had to sit out because she had suffered from osteomyelitis, which is inflammation of the bone marrow in her legs. She had a scar on one of her legs and walked with a slight limp. And sometimes she had severe, painful flare-ups. One day during PE, Pauline asked Juliet a question and the two of them started talking. Everyone was really shocked when the two of them started hanging out and it didn't take long for them to be inseparable. Pauline was weird. She didn't fit in at school. She didn't even try. Where Juliet was elegant and, like you said, kind of exotic, Pauline definitely was not. She was sulky with black curly hair that she wore shorter than most other girls. She always looked annoyed and had this permanent scowl on her face. And their worlds could not have been further apart.
Sounds like the odd couple.
Mm-hmm. Pauline came from a working class family. Herbert Reaper, her dad, managed a wholesale fish company in Christchurch. Although Pauline didn't know it, years earlier, her father had been married to a woman more than 10 years older than him. He had been the woman's second husband. When his first wife was 47 and Herbert was 36, he abandoned her and their two children during the Depression and moved to Christchurch with Honora, who was 16 years younger than him.
Oh.
Honora Parker, Pauline's mother, met Herbert when she worked as a secretary at a firm where he was an accountant. However it happened, when Honora was about 20, the two of them moved away and started living together as husband and wife. Although her legal name was Parker, she went by Reaper and nobody, not even their children, knew they were not married until it came out years later in the girl's trial.
Oh, my gracious.
When she found out her name was Parker, they're like, okay, we're trying her as Pauline Parker.
Well, I was going to say, when you introduced her as Reaper, I don't know a lot about this case, but I thought her last name was Parker. Well, yeah. That clears that up.
Yes.
Okay.
Honora and Herbert would go on to have four children. Their first baby was a little boy who had been born a blue baby.
Okay.
He had a heart defect and died shortly after his birth. Their oldest living child was 18-year-old Wendy, who had been such a joy to her parents. She had just been easy. She adored them. They adored her. And then came Pauline, who they had worried about a lot as a little girl, because during the war is when she had battled that osteomyelitis. It was so bad that she almost died. She had to be in the hospital for almost a full year.
Oh, that's a long
So it was really bad. She had to have her bandage changed on her legs for years. I want to say like 2 years every day.
Wow.
And she was in a lot of pain.
Yeah. And a lot just, yeah, that's extensive medical issues.
It really was. Now that she was older, they were still worrying about her. She seemed so angry and broody, and her parents could not understand why. Honora and Herbert had one more baby, a little girl named Rosemary, in March 1949, when Honora was 40 and Herbert was 54. She was born with Down syndrome and had to be institutionalized. She was sent to live at Templeton Farm outside Christchurch. Her family visited her really quite often and brought her home for holidays and special occasions. Pauline, she was a jerk, but she loved her little sister. She was actually really good to her. She would buy her little gifts and steal little gifts for her.
Even if she had to steal them.
Right. It sounds awful that they would send Rosemary away, but honestly, it was very common to do that. And even recommended by doctors.
Right. I know that back then that was it was a different time, and that was kind of like what you did.
Right.
That was kind of what you did.
To earn money, Honora ran a boarding house out of their family home. She took in boarders.
Mm-hmm.
Still, the family never seemed to have enough money. They just struggled a lot financially. I said earlier that Juliet and Pauline were an unlikely pair of friends, and in a lot of ways they were. But in other ways, it's kind of easy to see how it happened. Both girls were highly intelligent. They had vivid imaginations, and they both loved writing. Both girls were also starved for real connection. Both also had issues with their mothers. From the very beginning, you know, Juliet was an obvious problem for her mother that she preferred not to have to deal with. And Pauline's mother, she was under constant stress. And at times, Pauline got on her mom's nerves. I mean, it happens. Honora would fly off the handle every now and again, but immediately she'd regret it, and she'd try to make it up to her and like buy her something or take her somewhere to see a movie. Juliet and Pauline had attachment issues from being separated from their families and other kids because of their childhood illnesses, spending most of their formative years really being in lonely sick beds. All they had was their books, diaries, and their imaginations. When Juliet and Pauline first connected, both sets of their parents were really happy for them, because up until that point, each of them, they had grown so used to being alone that they preferred that to the company of other kids their age. But now they found each other and they spent as much time together as they possibly could.
Yeah, it sounds like they had a lot of common interest and shared experiences, I guess.
Right. And Juliet had been disinterested in people because nobody seemed to understand really how special she was. She had incredible ideas for novels. She was going to write these wonderful stories, these plays, and she loved opera, and she had this incredible dream world and inner beauty. But Pauline, she saw that. She saw how special Juliet was, and she admired everything about her.
I'm sure that Juliet appreciated that attention and that reverence for her.
Pauline recognized Juliet's inner beauty, how special she was, her brilliance, her wit and imagination. And Juliet was worth sharing herself with. And she hadn't found that before either. She loved poetry, books, and had a great fantasy world as well. Pauline admired Juliet so much that she would have become really whatever Juliet wanted her to become.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ladies, I don't know about you, but over the last few years, Melly and I have noticed differences in our skin that have been pretty discouraging. You know, the inevitable signs of aging, fine lines, some wrinkles here and there, dull, dry skin, and sunspots. Thankfully, there's a non-invasive treatment available without having to go under the knife. Tasha Briles at Lakeside Integrative in High Point, North Carolina, offers a total skin package that includes radiofrequency microneedling and laser skin resurfacing that can be done right in her office in under an hour. It stimulates collagen growth and elastin that improves the surface and texture of your skin, as well as tightening it. The laser treats acne scars, minimizes large pores, and lessens, if not completely fades, sunspots. Melody and I were blessed to get this treatment in late fall. We're going back for our after photos within a couple of weeks, and we'll be sure to post them on our Facebook group. Melody was just saying how she felt like it gave her a fresh start for her skin routine. It even cleared up some precancerous skin lesions she had, and it faded my sunspots completely as well as brightened and tightened my skin. We're really thrilled with our results. Lakeside Integrative offers an array of other services for men and women, as well as fillers, laser hair removal, weight loss, hormone, and medical treatments. Don't walk, run to the phone and call Lakeside Integrative to set up your appointment at 336-715-0007. Tell them Darlene and Melody from Hard Times and True Crime sent you.
So she idolized her, it sounds like, in a way.
She did. And I'm not sure if Juliet was really capable of loving anybody besides herself. You know, with all her childhood trauma, she needed to be admired.
Yeah.
She needed to take over and to control somebody and to be in charge. And you can see that when she's been, when her life has been totally out of her control for so long. Honestly, sympathize with her a little bit. And I see why she was angry, and I see why she needed somebody, and why she didn't have normal emotional attachments to people.
Right.
But, you know, every criminal, they have these sad stories.
Right.
Anyway.
And many people have the same stories and don't turn into criminals.
Exactly. That's right. Anyway, she found somebody in Pauline that she could control, that she could be in charge of. Mm. And these girls had an intense connection. It wasn't long before Pauline was spending nights and whole weekends over with the Humes. Everything the family did was perfect to Pauline. They were so sophisticated. Dr. Hume drank fancy wine and smoked pipes. He read good books, appreciated art. Hilda was welcoming and glamorous. She was patronizing and sympathized with the girls instead of being controlling like her mom was. Pauline wished that she could have been a part of Juliet's family, and she would have gladly given up her own to be a part of their family. Pauline started to really resent and look down on her own family, especially her mother. She would complain about her mother to Hilda, telling her how unhappy she was at home. She told Hilda how her mother beat her, which there's no evidence that that ever happened, by the way. It's possible that with Honora's stress level and Pauline's smart mouth, she might have got a smack.
Yeah.
But
it wasn't like she was being beaten all the time. And
right. She might have got popped once or twice.
Yeah. And we all have probably with our smart mouth.
Exactly. During the summers, Juliet and Pauline would write and put on their own plays. Of course, Juliet was always in the leading role, but Pauline didn't mind because she felt like Juliet deserved to be in the leading role. She was beautiful. They rode horses together, which Pauline loved. She didn't limp on her horse. She struggled doing other physical activities, but with riding a horse, she was just like everybody else. She even started taking riding lessons. The Humes probably paid for that. Pauline asked her parents for a horse, but they told her, no,
we can't afford that.
Later, they found out that she had bought one. Where she got the money, they have no idea. Again, I feel like probably the Humes.
Probably, but do you think they bought it for her?
I think so.
And she just didn't tell her parents that.
Yep.
But where did she keep it and board it? And
there was a place really close to her that she was able to board it for a cheap price. And once they found out about it, they did let her keep it because they thought, okay, well, maybe this is good for her.
Okay.
When school started back, Pauline would sneak out of her house and ride over to Juliet on her bike, even though it took like 45 minutes to get there. And mind you, her legs were in constant pain.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. How did she do that? But
she, where there's a will, there's a way. They would picnic in the middle of the night with wine and food.
What?
Yeah. Sometimes they would saddle up their horses and ride out into the night. At school, they would sneak under bleachers and write poetry or novels about their fictional characters that they had created. They lost themselves in this fantasy world that they created together. Pauline wrote in her journal, "We have decided how sad it is for other people that they cannot appreciate our genius. We hope the book will help them do so a little, though no one could fully appreciate us." By this time, the girls were fully living in like a shared delusion.
Yeah.
They had these intensities, really high highs and really low lows.
Okay. Yeah.
And I won't read. This is another poem that they wrote. I won't read the whole thing, but this grandiose.
Grandiose. That was the word I was looking for.
Sense of self. They both definitely had that. This one said, "Above these goddesses reign on high. I worship the power of these lovely two with an adoring love known to so few. Why are men such fools that they will not realize the wisdom that is hidden behind those strange eyes? And these wonderful people are you and I."
Okay.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I'm not sure what to think of that.
Mrs. Hume invited Pauline to stay with the family at their vacation house over one Easter holiday. Pauline would write in her journal, "Mrs. Hume did my hair. She calls me her foster daughter. She says she wished that I was her daughter, too." It breaks my heart for her mom.
Hilda, because she can't compete with the money and all that lady's offering her.
Hilda knew how fragile that relationship was with her mother. And instead of using her influence to encourage Pauline to see her mother's side, she was selfish. She really played with Pauline's emotions, too, because Pauline was desperate for Hilda's love and attention for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, and then I go back thinking about her own daughter, Juliet, who did not have that bond with her.
Right.
I'm wondering if she felt a little jealous, like, now my mom's showing attention to you and calling you this foster daughter.
When she was little, Juliet was neglected. Now that she's older, her mom wants to be accepted by her.
Oh, her friend.
She wants to be her friend. She kind of needed her mom, too, because she wanted her friend to come over all the time.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, to make the dynamics shifted a little bit.
Yeah. They were both getting their needs met. Juliet had her friend close, and her mom felt like she was one of them. Like she was the cool mom.
Yes.
On that trip, Pauline wrote in her diary on Good Friday that she and Juliet had a shared vision when they went out to watch the sunrise, and they both realized that they had the key to the fourth world, that only about 10 people have it, only a few enlightened, chosen people. And when they die, they're going to go to the fourth world. The girls were obsessive with this other world and with writing novels and these fictional characters. They weren't sleeping.
They've lost a grip on reality.
They definitely.
So there is a mental.
Yes.
Something mental going on.
Mm-hmm. In her journal, Pauline wrote that on average, she was sleeping about 4 hours a night, and Juliet was doing the same. They were feverishly writing poems, operas, and whole novels, like literal whole novels.
Wow.
Yeah. In May of 1952, the Humes were going on a trip to the U.S. and to England for 3 months. They couldn't or wouldn't take either of their children. Jonathan went to a boarding school, and Pauline's mother, Honora, actually called Hilda and offered to let Juliet come and stay with them. And she was thankful and accepted that invitation. But at the end of April, before it could happen, Juliet contracted tuberculosis and had to be sent to a sanatorium just outside of Christchurch. What did Dr. Hume and Hilda decide to do? They went ahead with their trip.
I knew you were going to say that. I'm like, good grief. So your child with tuberculosis, and like people died of that quite frequently.
Right.
And you're going to go abroad.
Yep.
That's crazy.
They left her alone once again. She was 14 and didn't see her parents for 114 days.
I really cannot wrap my mind around that.
Hilda would later say, like, she was shocked that the whole time they were gone, Juliet only wrote them twice. And they were really short letters. She didn't even put much thought into them.
Oh my goodness. I'm not sure who's crazier, the mom or the daughter.
Juliet told her parents that Pauline was the only person who really loved her. During that time, all she had was books, writing, and Pauline's letters to entertain her. The girls would write these long letters back and forth using made-up characters and names. Pauline's mom would actually bring her to see Juliet. But Pauline, she couldn't be with Juliet nearly as much as before, and she was lonely too. So there was a boarder who was staying at their house, a law student named Nicholas. And before long, Pauline was getting in bed with him at night until they were caught by her dad.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, he was promptly thrown out.
Sure.
Pauline was super embarrassed, of course, and devastated. She actually wrote in her journal, "Mother thinks I will have nothing more to do with him. Little she knows." Doesn't that sound like such a rebellious
teenager?
I really kind of see myself in these girls a little. I wasn't narcissistic, I don't think. But I...
No narcissist thinks they're narcissistic. I'm just kidding.
True.
No, I'm totally joking.
I was kind of in a fantasy land. I wrote all the time. Crazy. My mom would be like, "What the crap is this?" Not rebellion. Mm-hmm. That just wanting to do something bad.
So you can identify with that.
I can identify with that. And I think Pauline was a lot like that. She just wanted to do something bad.
Well, and I can... talking about the whole what you were writing and stuff, mm-hmm. you do have that creative kind of brain that
but the stuff I wrote, like, now I'm like, what in the world? Like, I'm surprised my mom didn't send me to a shrink
or to a boarding school.
Yes, well, she actually had to for a little while because I got out of hand.
Where did you go?
I went to several different... My mom had to send me away several times.
I did not know
I was that. Such a bad teenager. But anyway, so Pauline actually ended up going to see Nicholas at the boarding house.
Of course she did.
Yeah, and they ended up sleeping together. 4 days later, in August, Juliet's parents returned home, and Juliet was able to go back to her house to finish her recovery. Around that time, Pauline told Nicholas, "I'm not very much in love with you anymore."
Her friend came back home.
Right. She never told Juliet. She would say things like, "He's really cute," and this and that, but she never told her about them sleeping together.
That's interesting, because usually teenage girls do share that kind of information, especially when you're as close as those two were.
Yes. When the parents came home, mm-hmm. the Humes, Juliet was understandably cold mm-hmm. to them. She was 100% at that point devoted only to Pauline. She said, "You know, this is the only person that loves me in the world." And I'm sure she felt like that. I get it. And the girls drew even closer, if that's possible. On her 15th birthday, she decided she did not want to be called Juliet anymore and insisted that everyone call her... It's spelled Deborah, but it was pronounced Deborah. And Pauline was Gina.
Wait, did they just make the names up? Like, that wasn't like her middle name?
It was their fantasy...
Characters,
yes.
They're alter egos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Deborah and who? Gina?
Deborah and Gina.
Okay.
In reading a lot of what the girls were writing at the time, if you set aside the grandioseness, it really reminds me a lot of Anne Shirley.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Part of this is like really kind of normal teenage.
Well, I was going to say, we do know how dramatic teenagers can
yes,
be.
Yes. And I was drama queen.
I was a drama too.
So they were writing stuff about, like, emperors embarking on a reign of terror. Pageants the girls were acting out about coronations in Baronia. Just thick make-believe, which at 15 was a little bit odd, probably.
Yeah, because they were a little old for that.
But... Right. Since Hilda and Dr. Humes returned home, Hilda had started to grow concerned about the relationship between Juliet and Pauline, probably because she wasn't in the center of it anymore.
Okay, I was going to say, was there a reason she was getting concerned?
I think because Juliet was pushing her mom aside now.
Okay.
Because she was mad at her.
Because
she abandoned her.
Yeah, and the mom probably didn't realize all these writings they had, right? So she...
Well, I don't know. She did. She was privy to some of that. She knew that they were writing a lot.
Okay.
And... you know,
well, she probably heard them calling each other by those names.
Right. Well, they made her call them.
Oh,
yeah, she had to do it too. When she got concerned, she actually was worried that the girls were having a sexual relationship.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Instead of dealing with her own daughter, this is what makes me so mad about her. She and Dr. Hume called Honora, which was Pauline's mother, yeah, and told her that they thought she needed to take Pauline to see a doctor.
Oh, because it wasn't their precious daughter that was the problem.
They suggested that her daughter might be a lesbian. Well, Honora didn't think that because
she knew about the guy.
Right. They had just gotten her out of bed with a boy.
Yeah.
So she really wasn't concerned about that. She was more concerned because her daughter had lost a dramatic amount of weight, and that really worried her.
Hmm.
You know, she just wondered what was causing all of these destructive behaviors from Pauline, the lesbian stuff. She just didn't think it was true.
So is there anything to that?
Well, we'll talk. Yeah, we'll talk about that. So Honora did take Pauline to the doctor, but Pauline was completely uncooperative. She was livid with her mom for taking her.
Mm.
The doctor said that, in his opinion, that there was some homosexual aspect to the girl's relationship, but it would most likely fizzled out. But later it was determined that probably Hilda had something to do with that diagnosis. This was their friend.
Like the family doctor friend. So she may has already told him. Mm-hmm.
She did already talk to him.
Okay.
So that's probably...
Because I was going to say, what was he basing that on?
Right, because the girl didn't even talk to him about anything.
How's the doctor going to know?
She said that he was an imbecile. Honora was like, okay, well, what about her weight? Because that's what I'm worried about. And she didn't even tell him about the boy. But she was really, really worried about her weight. And the doctor said there was nothing physically causing the weight loss. So Honora told Pauline that until she gained weight, she was not allowed to see Juliet. And Pauline wrote in her journal, "I rang Juliet and told her of the threat. I wish I could die. This is not an idle or temporary impulse. I have decided that it would be the best thing. Death is not fearsome."
Obviously, the relationship is unhealthy. And
yes,
like there's some kind of unhealthy dependence between the two.
Absolutely. There was. And then the mom kind of felt guilty. And so she took her daughter to the movies. Mm-hmm. She loved her daughter. She didn't want her to hate her, but she wanted her to gain weight. Something was going on and she didn't really understand it. Yeah. Right. So then a man named Bill Perry moved from England to Christchurch for his work. And he went to see Hilda about his marriage troubles. Remember, she was a marriage counselor.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Well, it wasn't long before she and Bill Perry were in a full-fledged affair.
Oh, well, she really helped that marriage, huh?
Yeah.
She's now destroying his and her own.
Right.
Good gracious.
Mr. Perry would move into the little cottage on the Hume's property.
What?
Right in front of the kids, her husband, and everybody. Juliet suspected what was going on. She wasn't 100% sure, but...
Well, I was already a little suspicious of her being a marriage counselor to begin with.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah.
And he was not the first affair she had had, mind you.
So, yeah, this story just gets more and more bizarre. Okay.
The girls were driving their parents insane, one, to see each other. But Honora was serious that Pauline had to put on weight. So what she was suffering from, it had been determined, was bulimia nervosa. So she was making herself throw up.
Mm-hmm. Why was she doing that? Did she think she was overweight?
Maybe. Nothing compared to normal girls today. Maybe for that time. I don't know. But they actually described her as stocky.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know like that was even a thing back in... I mean, would you... 1950s?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I knew it was like a big thing in the 80s.
Yeah. And Hilda, she was also reluctant now to let the girls spend time with each other.
Right.
But it's so funny because Pauline never blamed Hilda. It was all her mom's fault, of course. She wrote in her journal, "Why could mother not die? Dozens of people are dying all the time. Thousands. So why not mother and father too?" After a while, the parents gave in and the girls were spending all their time together again at the Humes. The relationship was just as intense as ever, maybe even more. They were bathing together, sleeping in the same bed, and they were constantly talking about sexual things. Sometimes they'd only get like an hour or two of sleep a night. During their sleepovers, the girls would act out how they're different saints, because, you know, they had their own religion.
Oh, they made one up.
Yeah. They had these different saints who were actually movie stars. They were movie stars like Robert Wagner, okay, Johnny Weiss. They were two of the saints, but there were many more.
What did you say, Robert Wagner?
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to do an episode.
Really? With him in it.
Yes.
Okay, well, he was one of their saints.
Oh, now that's interesting.
Yes. Whenever they would stay the night with each other, during their sleepovers, the girls would act out how their different saints would make love. I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. This is so bizarre.
Yeah, it really is. Most of these saints, or all the saints, were the girls' favorite actors. They had decided that they were going to publish their novels, and they were going to have them turned into movies. These stars, their saints, they would be in the movies, and the girls would co-star.
Okay.
With them. Yeah, alongside their favorite actors and saints. So Pauline and Juliet, they started really actually working. They were serious. They were not playing. This was not some little teenage fantasy for them. They were working, saving money, and even stealing money for that upcoming trip to Hollywood.
Gracious.
Until they eventually had the money saved.
Seriously.
Yes. Now, in the beginning, Pauline was kind of Juliet's puppet.
Well, I don't think you said that, but I was already picking up on that.
Yeah. Since she'd come home from the sanatorium, the relationship had shifted a little bit. And now it seemed like Juliet needed Pauline just as much as Pauline needed her. They had become almost equals. Hilda would later say that when Pauline would go home, Juliet would start feeling sickly and stay in bed for days. When she felt better, she was clingy with Hilda. And I think that's one reason that they started to let Pauline come back around, because she needed time to focus on Bill Perry.
Right.
And she didn't have time for her daughter to
be clingy.
So it was like when Pauline was around, it gave Hilda a break.
Right.
Again, selfish.
And it sounds like, I mean, these, like you've already said it, but the girls, that they've got this unhealthy dependence on one another. It's like can't do anything separately.
Exactly. And I think it was worse, too, for Juliet, because Juliet, after she had come home from the sanatorium, was not able to go back to school. She never went back to school.
Oh, okay.
So she was home all the time.
Because she was so sickly.
Right. Her lungs weren't healthy enough. So she was at home all the time, kind of immersed in this, really immersed in this fantasy world that the girls were living in. And they decided, the girls, that they were telepathic and that they were insane. Pauline wrote, "We do the things we do because we are stark, raving mad, and we are thrilled by the thought of it."
I believe it.
Mm-hmm. At some point, Dr. Hume found out, or he was told, about Hilda and Bill Perry's relationship. He decided it was okay. Yeah,
family, oh goodness.
I don't know, he might have been happy that he was taking her off of his hands, because he said, well, you guys can just stay. He can stay there in the little cottage by the house, and we'll just continue to live here as normal so that Juliet and Jonathan don't find out. But then Dr. Hume was asked to resign, either because of Hilda's indiscretion or because of his arrogance. I'm not sure which. But after that, Juliet found her mother in bed with Bill Perry.
Gracious.
And she kind of already knew, but that it was still a blow.
Well, sure. Yeah.
And then on top of all that, her parents told her that they were getting a divorce.
Okay.
And that Dr. Hume would be going back to England, that Jonathan would go with him, but Juliet would go with an aunt to South Africa because of her health.
Yeah, send her somewhere else.
Yeah, for the sake of her health, of course. The tickets were already booked. July 3rd of 1954, Juliet and Pauline were devastated. The girls cried and cried. But then they asked Dr. Hume if Pauline could go to South Africa with her to live. And instead of saying no, he said, it's up to Pauline's parents. Yeah. If Pauline's parents will let you go, then sure, you can go. Knowing good and well that her mom was not going to let her go to South Africa at 15 years old.
Yeah. But he put it off on her. So
yes,
he's not the bad guy.
As always. That's what they always
said. It always gets put off on her.
Right. And the girls decided, you know what, we'll just take the money that we saved for the trip to Hollywood and we'll combine that money and book a ticket for Pauline
to go
South Africa. But Honora was like, no, your little 15-year-old butt is not moving with your friend
to South Africa.
Sorry. And for some reason, Pauline was actually shocked.
Oh, she expected her mom was going to let
her go. Yeah, she was like, why? Like, she just was bamboozled that her mom was not going to let her go. She was furious. She told Juliet that if she were just dealing with her dad, he would have let her go. It was always her mother hindering her from something. And Hilda, egging the girls on, wanting to be friends with them, she asked Pauline one day if she thought she was going to like England and South Africa. Yes. Oh, this lady. On June 19th, Pauline wrote in her journal, "We practically finished our books today, and our main like for the day was to moiter mother. They said moiter because that's how they said murder in the American movies." Huh. She went on, "This notion is not a new one, but this time it is a definite plan which we intend to carry out. We have worked it all out and are both thrilled with the idea. Naturally, we feel a trifle nervous, but the anticipation is great. The girls decided they would kill Honora, make it look like an accident, and then Pauline could go to South Africa with Juliet."
And which girl's idea was this?
Pauline's to start. Yeah. And then Juliet just came around to the idea. Pauline's dad said that before she started hanging out with Juliet, she was not like this.
Right.
She had changed. She started to hate them. And I believe that.
Yeah. And it does seem like Hilda kind of did play up that angle.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is just the catalyst that kind of brought it all to a head.
Right. On June 20th, Pauline wrote, "Deborah and I talked for some time. Afterwards, we discussed our plans for mortaring mother and made them clear. But peculiarly enough, I have no qualms of conscience. Or is it so peculiar? We are so made." Pauline asked her mother if she would go with her and Juliet to have tea in an afternoon walk at Victoria Park before Juliet left for South Africa. Honora was happy that her daughter wanted to include her. She was just excited. She was glad that Pauline seemed to be making peace with the fact that Juliet was moving away. She was happy to treat the girls to a fun afternoon. And on June 21st, Pauline wrote, "Deborah rang and we decided to use a brick and a stocking rather than a sandbag. Mother has fallen in with plans beautifully. Feel quite keyed up." The next morning, June 22nd, she wrote, "The day of the happy event. I felt very excited last night and sort of night before Christmas, but I did not have pleasant dreams. I'm about to rise."
That is chilling.
It is. It is.
Wow.
Juliet showed up at the house and Honora cooked the girls a nice lunch. After they ate, the girls helped wash the dishes. Now, winter in New Zealand is June, July, and August. It was June and mm-hmm. it was a very cold day. So Honora and the girls dressed up in their winter coats before they walked to the bus stop. Victoria Park is where they were going, and it has this panoramic view of Christchurch and Canterbury Plains, Pegasus Bay, and the Southern Alps. It's just a beautiful park, full of different walking trails. When they first got there, they went to a tea kiosk and got 3 hot teas. They sipped, talked, and just laughed before they went on their walk. At around 3 p.m., the girls walked to Nora about 420 feet down a lonely wooded path. When they got close to a little wooden bridge, Juliet dropped this pink stone, just like they had planned. When Honora bent down to look or to pick it up, Pauline took the half brick that she had stuffed in a stocking and she pulled it out of her coat pocket and hit her mother over the back of the head.
Man.
What was going through her mind? Ugh. I hope she could not even process what was happening. She tried to defend herself from the blows to the head, but Pauline ruthlessly bashed her again and again. As Honora tried to fend her daughter off, Juliet grabbed the stocking and she too beat her while Pauline held her mother down by the throat.
That is just, no words for that. Like, I don't even understand how two teenage girls could do something that brutal and
wicked.
And she said she had no conscience about it.
Yeah.
But it's just hard to wrap your mind around that.
Mm-hmm. Honora was mercilessly beaten, almost to the point of being unrecognizable. Blood was everywhere. Honora moaned and gurgled until the girls were satisfied that she was dead. Then they ran back to the tea kiosk where they had just been, their hands covered in Honora's blood. Agnes Ritchie, the owner of the tea kiosk, she saw the girls running up, bloodied and pale and terrified. Pauline screaming, "It's Mummy. I think she's dead. We tried to carry her, but she was too heavy." Juliet said, "Her mother is covered in blood." The girls both said that they were walking back when Mummy tripped and hit her head on the plank. She just kept falling and hitting her head over and over again.
Oh, my gracious. Wait.
Yes.
That was their story.
Yes. So stupid.
That is stupid. I thought these were like really intelligent girls and they had thought through all their stuff and they...
Intelligent people are always intelligent to a point.
Especially when they're committing murder, I guess. Right. Moiter. When they're committing moiter.
Moiter. Juliet would say, "I'll always remember her head banging," which I hope she does.
But wait a minute. I'm sorry. I just got to go back to that. She just kept falling and hitting her head.
Yes.
Like I'm trying to think of what would make them say that.
I don't know.
Carry on.
So then Kenneth Ritchie, he ran down, of course, to where the girl said Honora was. And when he saw her, this is not a police officer. This is a tea kiosk owner.
Yeah.
He was like, "This is not an accident."
Obviously.
When investigators got there, they took the girl's statements and allowed Dr. Hume to pick them up, which is crazy to me. He just let them go. They looked like they were in shock. Yeah.
Well,
they weren't crying. They were just in shock.
Yeah. Maybe not shock. Said. Maybe they, yeah.
They told him the same story that they'd given everybody at the park. It wasn't long before the stocking with the half brick covered in blood and brain matter was found, though.
What? What'd they do with that?
I guess threw it into a bush or something.
Like, it seems like the most not thought through at all story ever.
Yeah. Poor Honora had 45 skull fractures.
Oh, that's so horrible.
And 24 other lacerations on her face and scalp.
Wow.
They also found bruising on her throat from being held down. It didn't take long to figure out, of course, this was no accident. When the girls were questioned, Juliet said, "Okay, I'll tell you what happened. I was walking ahead, and when I turned back, I saw that Pauline was holding her mom's head, but I don't know what happened." Yeah.
And now she's already thrown her friend under the bus.
Right.
Like, they've got this relationship that they're codependent on each other, and then all of a sudden, boom, no, right. You did it.
Exactly. Actually, Pauline, she was like, "Yeah, that is exactly what happened." She backed it up.
Wait.
She was going to take all the blame. And Hilda burned Juliet's journals because she read them and knew she had better.
Yeah.
But unfortunately for them, when they searched Pauline's room, they found her journals.
Yeah.
And realized Juliet helped Pauline and was just as complicit in the murder as Pauline was.
That's an unbelievable story.
The crazy thing was they were enjoying the attention together.
Wow.
They were happy to have murdered Honora. There was not one shred of remorse in either of the girls. When in jail, they were having fun. It was just shocking how joyful they were.
Mm.
They enjoyed their time in jail together. They would stay up chatting all night long, even asking the guards to get them tea. And the guards were like, "No, we're not getting you tea." When they went to trial, their lawyers tried to get them off on insanity, saying, you know, they're paranoid and they're delusional.
Well, they probably are all those things, but they knew criminally right from wrong. Insane.
Yes. And they knew right from wrong.
Definitely.
That is the only way you can get off.
And they just didn't have any concern for it.
Exactly. Juliet, she told the psychiatrist sent to examine her that there was nothing in death and Honora was miserable anyway. She said the day we killed her, I think she knew beforehand what was going to happen and didn't seem to bear a grudge. Wow. When asked if she had regrets, she said, none whatsoever. Of course, we didn't want to get my family involved with this, but we have both been terribly happy since it happened. So it has all been a blessing in disguise.
This girl is unreal.
One of the guards heard Juliet laughing and saying to Pauline, the old girl took a bit more killing than we thought.
Gracious.
Their lack of remorse was bizarre.
That is bizarre. Oh, and also, why are they able to talk to each other? Are
they
in the same
cell? They were in the same cell.
That's ridiculous.
They didn't even have it in them to pretend to care. The psychiatrist who interviewed them told a friend he has never seen such evil as he has in those girls. And he was a psychiatrist on their side.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was for the defense.
That speaks volumes.
Hilda and Bill Perry showed up together at court every day. Hilda even testifying in her daughter's defense, still making excuses because, you know, she's such a genius.
Yeah.
Dr. Hume took their son, Jonathan, and moved back to England. Somehow, Jonathan, he was able to leave without even realizing what had happened. He had chicken pox. Okay. So he was in quarantine.
Okay.
And the dad really did try to shield him from that. They kind of made it like, oh, well, he's such a bad person. He left. And I'm not saying that he wasn't a bad person, but that was a joint decision between the parents to protect the son.
Yeah.
And he had a job back in England. You know, we already talked about
his wife's attending the court with her lover.
Exactly.
I'm sure there was part of him that wanted to distance himself from story, but
the enemies that they made, you know, they were like, I knew those people were crazy. The prosecution said the girls knew exactly what they were doing when they killed Honora.
And they did.
Not only that, but the murder was premeditated and methodically planned by two highly intelligent, dirty-minded little girls. I didn't write this down. I wish I would have now, but he said to the jury, whether you feel sorry for the girls is irrelevant. Whether you feel sorry for the mother is irrelevant. That's not what you're judging on. Mm. You're judging, did these girls willfully and knowingly commit murder?
And they did.
And they did. Right. But of course, I think the defense was hoping they would feel sorry for the girls, and they're insane. They couldn't help it. Look at their traumatic childhood, you know, that kind of thing. The jury was out for just over 2 hours, and they were found guilty.
That wouldn't take long.
No. They were sentenced to prison under Her Majesty's pleasure, which meant until they decided.
When they decided you could get out?
Yeah. Okay. Whenever. It could have been 7, 10, 15, 25 years. They couldn't sentence the girls to death because of their age. Or if they had been older, they probably would have been sentenced to death.
Yeah, I would even argue that they deserved it.
Right. The girls were sent to different prisons, and that was probably...
Good call.
The worst punishment of all for them. They thought they were going to be together.
Well, I think that goes to show that the fact is they were still teenage girls with teenage brains.
Yes.
Who didn't even consider the fact that they wouldn't, you know, like,
right,
they didn't have that capacity to think because they're teenagers.
Exactly. After the trial, Hilda left the country with Bill Perry. She got out of there as soon as the trial was over, and she actually married him. Juliet's mother never visited her in prison. Neither did her father.
Well, that's none of that surprising.
No. Her dad did write her, though, to tell her he was getting married. And Pauline's dad never could forgive her. During the trial, he had to be like, so I'm actually married to somebody else. And the reason he hadn't come forward with it was because his wife was taking him for child support.
Oh.
Yeah. So he owed like
all that back pay.
All this back pay. And like, I kind of feel sorry for him because their life together was not easy. You know, he did this terrible thing. He abandoned his wife during the Depression.
Yeah.
And his kid. And that was terrible. But my gosh, has he suffered?
Yeah. I don't feel sorry for him, though.
I do. You know, I feel sorry
because
for
him. Because he left. He abandoned his wife and kids.
I know.
Yeah, I don't feel sorry for him.
I know. I'm not using this as an excuse, but they said she was really mean and dominant. But still, he left his kids.
Yeah. No sympathy from me.
Right. Well, I just feel bad. His wife was murdered. One kid was born dead. You know what I mean? Like, these terrible things happened to them. They lived the most boring life ever. Yeah. He worked for a fish company. They barely had enough money to get by.
Right.
He might have thought he was getting into something better. He wasn't.
Right.
So anyway, Pauline's dad never could forgive her and never saw her again. I do think she ended up years later making amends with her older sister.
Yeah,
Wendy.
I just don't think I could. I know we're supposed to forgive. I guess I would have to do that. But mm-hmm. I don't think I would want to. I wouldn't speak to her either.
Yeah. And I don't think they did for a long, long time.
Wouldn't want a relationship with her at all.
Right.
I'm glad they didn't get to have their prison sentence together.
Oh, me too. I'm so glad. They both said that while in prison, they came to terms with what they did. But the guards said they never saw evidence of any humility.
And you
in
said
either of them.
While in prison, are you going to tell me they got out?
They got out.
Both of them got out.
They served 5.5 years.
What? No way.
5.5 years.
That is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. That is a shame.
They got out November of 1959. The girls were given new names and secretly released from prison.
They were given new names, like took new names on themselves?
No, they got new identities.
By who?
The government.
Okay.
Yeah.
Deborah and Gina?
No. Ann Perry is who Juliet became.
Okay.
And Pauline would become Hillary Nathan.
Okay. Did they give them those new identities because they thought they would be endangered out in the public?
Yeah, people hated them.
I'm sure they did.
I mean, they were
jerks.
Yeah.
Nobody would want you living in their town.
No.
Did the girls split up at that point? They weren't together anymore?
Oh, no. I had always heard that they weren't allowed to contact each other, but that was not true. But they never did.
Okay.
When Juliet, who became Ann Perry, when she was released from prison, she went to England to be with family and finished her degree. And then she did go to Hollywood.
Oh, she did end up going.
She went to Hollywood and she worked as a nanny. She actually became a Mormon.
Wait, can you imagine her being your nanny?
I know.
Like,
I know.
That's why they should not have given them new names. Because, like, the poor people don't even know.
Right. Pauline went on to study at Auckland University, and she graduated with a BA in 1964. She spent a year working as a librarian, but later ended up moving to Scotland, and she gave writing lessons and taught the mentally ill. Now, she did have a sister who had Down syndrome, who she actually did love. I mean, that was kind of consistent throughout her life. She always was really good to her little sister. And so maybe she really did have a passion. She ended up kind of becoming a recluse and ended up moving to Scotland.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's weird to me that they both seem to have gone on to have like these normal lives. Because I'm thinking too, because like there has to be mental illness going on there.
Yeah. I mean, they not only lived normal lives, they lived productive lives.
Well, that's a shame because they don't deserve.
No.
They don't deserve that opportunity. But anyway, so let's hear it. What'd they do?
Okay, so they kept a low profile until 1994 because people were still interested in the crime. I mean, it was kind of a crime of the century deal in mm-hmm. New Zealand. So in 1994, a movie came out starring Kate Winslet, and it was called Heavenly Creatures, and it was about the murder.
Oh, I'm going to go watch that.
Yeah. Now, this brought, of course, a renewed interest in the crime and in the girls who had committed the murder, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this journalist, after doing a lot of sleuthing, he managed to uncover...
Oh, I like this.
Yes, their identity. And Juliet, who was now Ann Perry, was an extremely prolific true crime author.
Oh my goodness, you're not telling me this right now.
Yes, who lived in a mansion.
What?
In the UK. Yep. She ended up moving to Scotland as well. So before long, they lived really close to each other. Both lived in Scotland, never had anything to do with each other, were both recluses, never got married. But Ann Perry, if you Google her.
And I will.
You're going to see all this stuff. Like, she's on all these podcasts teaching people how to write.
She's a true crime
writer.
She's a
true crime author.
I don't
know. Like, a very famous, like, she's written so many books. She's a sought after author. In fact, I had wanted to do this story for a while because it was crazy to me because she's still alive, but she actually just died at 81 back in April. She had a heart attack.
Of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And as far as I know, Pauline, she's still alive.
Yeah. Under that new name?
Under the new name. Hillary Nathan.
Hillary Nathan.
So I watched an interview with Ann Perry, which she was devastated when this came out because she had this whole big career.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she was like, this is going to destroy me. But it actually helped her career.
Really?
It really helped her.
Because now
her.
People are fascinated by this and they're exactly. all going out to get her books to see what she was writing because I'm sitting here thinking, I want to know what she wrote.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, she was already famous, but it definitely helped her career. But anyway, Hillary, she lived in this house like by herself.
Mm-hmm.
And when she moved out and sold the house, there was this mural painted on the wall of a girl with blonde hair and a girl with brown hair. Her sister, Wendy, said that she really didn't come to terms with what she had done or even feel any remorse, you know, feel anything until about 3 years into her sentence. And then what she had done just kind of hit her. I don't know that Ann Perry had the capacity to feel guilt.
Yeah.
I'm not God. I don't know. So as far as was there a lesbian relationship, I don't believe it was. Ann Perry, she's progressive. I don't think she would have had a problem saying, but she was like, we wouldn't have even known how. She was like, when they ask me that, and this is true, when they ask her, you know, are you two? She was like, we're both girls.
Like she didn't even comprehend.
She didn't even understand.
It was an unhealthy dependence on one another. Yeah. It was just, there was a lot of weird stuff about
codependency.
Yeah.
And I think they were exploring like sexuality, but I don't think that they were trying to have sex. Tell me, what are your thoughts?
Fact that they both were able to go on and be very successful, obviously they did have some creative genius in
there. Yeah.
But obviously they were mad, just like that girl said in her diary.
Yeah.
And I know that there are, I think that schizophrenia and some bipolar some of those people are very successful who are like that because they can just get on those high highs and just mm-hmm. be really creative and just go and do amazing things.
Yeah.
Amazing things.
Yeah.
It drives them. And then sometimes, unfortunately, some people take it to an extreme, an evil extreme.
Right.
As they obviously did. So I'm surprised that they didn't get a diagnosis.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, and again, their childhood trauma and all that played into that. But still, mm-hmm. at the very end of the day, it was just pure evil. Evil. Yeah.
And I believe Ann Perry said, had she not been locked up then, had that not happened, she may have gone on. Like,
to be worse and do more.
Yeah. To have done more, like she said, would not have been good. So I think she knew there was something not right. But I think she thought a lot of it had to do with her trauma. And I think a lot of it had to do with her trauma. I'm not discounting that. You know how my
past.
I'm always looking at both sides because I can say that I'm not the same person today that I was as a teenager. When I was a teenager, I pathologically lied. My mom had to put me in different programs. I was wild. That relationship that Pauline had with her mother, that's probably the same relationship I had with my mom, except I can imagine hurting her. If my mom would have died, I loved her.
You probably still had a conscience about it.
Yeah, I did.
Something inside of you telling you from wrong.
Yeah. I was more like, if I died, she would feel sorry. You know what I mean? Like,
well, because that's the self-centeredness of a teenager.
Exactly. But it wasn't like I would have ever wished anything bad to happen to her. I would have wished something happened to me so she would feel bad. So I believe in redemption because of myself.
Well, we've talked about it before on here. I believe in redemption. I don't know.
I would hate to be judged. But, okay, now I did not commit a murder. But I often wonder, what if I had got caught up with the wrong people? I was so, I don't know, desperate. I was so out there that I wonder if I could have been talked into terrible things. I don't think so. Like, I can't imagine that I would have ever done anything like that.
I guess any of us have the capacity to do way more evil than we think, right?
Right.
You know, but
But not having remorse.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
The remorse part.
The guy who wrote the book that I did a lot of my research from, he thinks Ann Perry is a sociopath. And he said, you know, I get it. This is how sociopaths are made.
Yeah, exactly. So here, my final thought on that was, I do believe in redemption, but I believe if there's true redemption, then there's true remorse.
If you want to go to our Facebook group, I'm going to add pictures of Pauline Parker, now Hillary Nathan. I'm going to add pictures of her mural. And I'm also going to add the interview by Ann Perry that she did about the murder. Sorry if you hear my dog in the background. But those sure were some hard times.
Heavenly Creatures has got to be the worst poem I've ever heard. So to make up for it, I wrote one of my own. Darlene and Melody are so clever. That's why Hard Times and True Crimes is the best podcast ever. And if you've heard the first episode today, don't be sad, there are plenty more to play. And if you get scared listening to stories that are bloody, maybe you should listen with a friend or a buddy. Till next time, goodbye.